Hey everybody, welcome in. It's our September edition. We're back, Vasculitis Visionaries Podcast with Kaylee Bynes, as always. I'm Ben Wilson, so happy to have you with us for our latest episode, and we have a really fun guest today. Kaylee, first off, great to be back with you after our little brief summer hiatus. Hope everybody enjoyed our best of podcast. I know you've got quite a lot going on in your life right now. How's everything with you?
Just a little bit going on. Yeah. Due with my firstborn in October. So let's see, we got about 6 or 7 weeks till the due date. So that's kind all encompassing.
Pretty bad at math, but last time I checked, that's like a month away. So
don't say that. That's at least a month and a half.
Okay. Well, by the time we get to the following month, that will be very exciting. So congratulations in advance to you, Kaylee. As far as, and also that's a theme, because we'll have congratulations in order as we bring on our guest, and really excited for this one in Dr. Jessica Bloom. What is so notable too about Dr. Bloom, besides the fact that she is one of several guests we've brought on who are in that young doctor category, only a few years older than us, making us feel bad about our lack of accomplishments. But in all seriousness, Dr. Bloom, the first pediatric rheumatologist selected for the VCRC VF Fellowship, which was a massive accomplishment. She is based in Denver, Colorado right now. So sort of in my neck of the woods, Kaylee, not too far from Las Vegas. And she has already amassed a really impressive resume so far that we're going to talk about a lot of stuff with her here in the next half hour or so.
Definitely. I mean, I don't want to give too much away because she really has a lot that she brings to the table and is going to talk about in more depth. But it's great to have her on. She's also a professor of pediatrics in addition to being a pediatric rheumatologist. So she, teaches and treats, and has a master's of science in clinical science, which I think is always really cool when people have that research background that they're applying to their medical degree and their medical work. So it'll be really interesting to talk to her.
No doubt. So Dr. Jessica Bloom, she is coming up on our September edition here. It's the Vasculitis Visionaries Podcast. As always, we're brought to you by Amgen and Genentech. It's Dr. Bloom joining us right after this. Time now to welcome in our guest as we roll on September edition of the Vasculitis Visionaries Podcast. So happy to be welcoming in Dr. Jessica Bloom, as she is, as we mentioned in our introduction, a congratulations certainly in order, as she's just been named the first pediatric rheumatologist selected for the VCRC and VF Fellowship. So we're going to talk a lot about that with you, Dr. Bloom. Of course, for right now, you're hitting the ground running there in the Denver area at Children's Hospital. I wish this was not the first topic we had to talk about, but seeing as though we're, 18 months basically into the pandemic, and we're now seeing so many more younger people start to get impacted by COVID, I'm sure this is quite the interesting time for you to really jump in head first to what you're currently doing while also working on, I know you just finished your first week on call. So first off, thanks for joining us, but also what's the latest and what are things like right now for you just with your day-to-day work environment?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on the podcast. It has definitely been an interesting time to finish my fellowship in pediatric rheumatology and start as an attending. It seems like this pandemic just doesn't want to end. I would say right now, we're definitely seeing an increase in kids getting COVID and obviously in the adult hospitals. And so it's been an interesting experience hitting the ground running, as you said. I think now that school started, we're definitely seeing another wave of kids getting COVID, and it's hard with the different mask policies, but overall, I would say, in pediatric rheumatology, in the beginning of the pandemic, we were really nervous. Our kids are super high risk for a lot of things and really worried that they were going to be hit hard and differently than the general population. But fortunately, we saw that our kids did fairly well and relative to everyone else, similar ways. And part of that might be that some medicines they're on do help in the treatment of COVID or that cytokine storm like tocilizumab or anakinra. But we were just really fortunate that our kids seemed to do all right. I would say with vasculitis though, they happen to be on the medications that are at the highest risk. So things like rituximab or high dose steroids really do increase children and risk for children and adults in terms of hospitalization, morbidity, mortality. And so that has been scary and really something we've kept in mind when titrating medications and talking about the vaccine and timing of everything. But overall, yeah, it's been a crazy time. And I would just encourage patients to follow the CDC guidelines, talk to their doctors, and make sure they feel comfortable with, you know, how they're approaching their day-to-day life.
Thank you so much for, you know, all your work on that. I have a few friends who are also doctors, and it's just been, for healthcare workers in general, it's just been a really long 18 months. So we appreciate the work that you're doing, both for our community and for patients as a whole. One thing that Ben touched on when we started was the VCRC VF fellowship, the fact that you're doing pediatric rheumatology, and you're the first pediatric rheumatologist who has won that. And we're very excited about that. And I just was hoping you could talk a little bit more about what drew you not only to vasculitis treatment and research, but also this PEDS focus, because I think it's a little bit rare in our communities.
Yes, definitely. I would love to speak more about that. And I just want to add for the COVID topic, I didn't mention vaccination specifically, in that we definitely are also encouraging our patients to get vaccinated, and really hope that more and more children qualify based on their age and are able to get the vaccine. And especially now that this third booster is an option, we are encouraging that and looking at the American College of Rheumatology's guidelines in terms of timing with medication. So I did just want to put a plug in for the vaccine. And as a pediatrician, speaking of kids, that's definitely something we think about. So I'm a pediatric rheumatologist. So I did went to medical school at University of Michigan and then came out to Colorado for pediatric residency. And both in medical school and residency, I was really fortunate to get exposure to both mentors and patients within rheumatology. And the ones with vasculitis, they just seem to stick out to me the most with, you know, the puzzle of their picture and problem solving, but also just how much the approach to treatment and working with families and all of that was evolving. And so once I became a pediatric rheumatology fellow, I really wanted to focus on vasculitis. Throughout my training, I tried to get involved in the research scene and really find a place for myself. And then this fellowship came about as a really great opportunity, the VCRC VF fellowship, for now that I'm starting my attending life, as a way to get more exposure, more mentorship, and really sort of find my path in this. And so, speaking about kids and how vasculitis is a bit different for them, I think there really is a spectrum. A lot of people, you know, we always say in pediatrics, kids aren't little adults, because even if the disease is the same, there's the question of genetic burden or dealing with a disease during your periods of both physical and psychological growth and development, and just all of the different ways that it can affect children. But also just working with children is super fun because they're super resilient. So, you know, watching kids with chronic illness dealing with this while they're growing and forming relationships with them is just a really unique experience.
I know for Kaylee and I, we're working right now at the CARA. Kaylee, you know what the acronym is. I'm terrible with memorizing anything or knowing any acronyms, but essentially the organization that's putting together the current, it's basically an entirely separate website just based on pediatric and looking at pediatric vasculitis and trying to give, mostly for parents of kids and also for kids themselves, just the resources they need. And it's, as you can imagine, like, it's an incredibly long and time-consuming process, just because we're pretty much starting from scratch. And so, like, I know Kaylee and I, we've been, you know, we felt really fortunate to be included in some of those discussions. But I think it just leads into the larger point of Dr. Bloom, which is just that it is kind of it's almost a completely different mindset when you're looking at the treatment through the patient side. And I know for us too, both being patients and being diagnosed in our late teens, early 20s, you always think, all right, well, we're kind of in that rare group, and there should be more representation. That's kind of been a big theme, honestly, of our podcast here in season two, is just how can we better represent more communities within the larger scope of vasculitis. So as you kind of entered this this sort of part of the field, where did you see the representation gap, so to speak, as far as children and pediatrics, just compared to some of the other stuff, and just like the volume of overall studies you've seen from the adult side of things?
Yeah, so you bring up so many great points. And to answer that question, I'll start with the fact that you just said that you were diagnosed in your late teens, early 20s. And so even that question of children, you know, when they're diagnosed and when they become adults, is there something really that different from the day they're 17 and 364 days and when they're 18? Probably not. And so the question is, when does that shift occur, if there is a shift, and what is that? And so in terms of studies, there is a really, really big hole when it comes to pediatric vasculitis research. We do have CARA, which you mentioned. It's an amazing organization. It's the Childhood Arthritis and Rheumatology Research Alliance, and they're doing amazing work in forming registries for all of our diseases. Pediatric vasculitis hasn't quite been a focus yet, and they have about 10,000 kids with JIA or juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and are expanding with lupus and dermatomyositis, but we haven't quite gotten to vasculitis. And so there is definitely room for research that because the disease is so rare, and because logistical and ethical concerns, there haven't been any randomized controlled trials for children with vasculitis. And today I'm speaking specifically about ANCA-associated vasculitis, but a lot of this applies to children with any form of vasculitis. In terms of research studies, there's been one for rituximab. It was recently approved for kids age 2 and up with GPA and MPA, but that was like a single-armed, uncontrolled trial, still not randomized, controlled, or blinded. And so we're really going off adult studies. And there's been some surveys for pediatric rheumatologists it shows that we don't know what to go off of. Do we, in the moment when we're seeing this child with pulmonary hemorrhage and renal failure, do we stick to what we've seen in the adult studies? Do we do what we feel more used to or comfortable with? And it seems that they're really hoping for pediatric specific studies and guidelines. There's also only been about a handful of case series, and only about 4 have more than 100 patients. And I think 3 of those are the same patients. So it's really an understudied disease. So it's exciting to enter, but also a little intimidating because it's sort of a wide open field.
So when you talk a little bit about, the symptoms that lead to diagnosis for pediatric cases, do you find that those are fairly similar to the adult cases? You know, do children present differently? And if so, does that kind of change your diagnostic approach?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So there are some studies that say kids present differently, and it's also not only in their symptoms, but also the timing and the location and where they present. And so the majority of children do present with severe disease. So they have life-threatening disease or organ damage, because a lot of it has to do with the fact that there are so few pediatric rheumatologists. So these patients grow up and start having these smoldering symptoms, and they really don't get diagnosed or transferred to a hospital with pediatric rheumatologists until they have severe disease. And so in terms of pediatric rheumatologists, there's about, I think we're at like 420, something like that, for board certified pediatric rheumatologists in the country. And so I know in Colorado, we have about 7 or 8 now, and we are the only ones in the surrounding 7 states. So we see people from all over, and it will take a while for it to be known that they should come to us. So it sort of has to get picked up by a generalist, and it's a very rare disease. And so that is one challenge. And then in terms of how they actually present, so the median age for kids is about 12 to 14 years old, and I think more female predominant versus in adults. But it's obviously very rare. But there was a study back in 2017 that looked at adults versus kids, and it did find that kids with ANCA-associated vasculitis seem to have less frequent myalgias, peripheral neuropathy, and more frequent fevers, ischemic abdominal pain, and damage to their nasal cartilage and airways. Kids also are at higher incidence of subglottic stenosis. And then additionally, they have higher relapse rates. So about 80% will eventually relapse. They need treatment for longer because they start young. And so that's more and more years of cumulative medications with adverse effects. And they also were found to have more vasculitis-related damage, especially in the ear, nose, and throat. And so it is a little different beast, even though for now we sort of are trying to look at it as similar and treat similarly based on the data we have available. But I think another thing to think about is just the fact that they're growing during these times. And so there's a lot of questions for or things like bone growth or just growth overall, especially during menstruation or prior to that. And then mental health, like struggling with chronic disease as a kid is, it's hard as an adult as well, but I think not kids don't have as many coping skills. And so that can be really challenging.
It's just amazing to hear that it's what you mentioned, what, 7-8 overall in what is essentially like a 7-state region. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of jarring just to think about, and not only from the fact that it's, you know, basically one per state, essentially, if you equate it that way, but just the more challenges of logistics and having, you know, patients and their families figure out about this. I would think too that I get the sense that the data too that we have for some of these limited studies is pretty narrow just because of the rarity of these types of diseases and these sorts of patients just historically. And I know we've had Kaylin Young, who runs the BPPRN. She was a podcast guest here earlier in this second season. So just how narrow is it? I mean, I would imagine you have some, like at least have a general sense of like how limited the data is. I'd imagine it's at least enough to make some sort of generalizations like you've been able to and have some ideas of where to go forward from here. But like, just what are we talking as far as the limited scope?
Well, I would say it's limited in the sense that what's been published is really, so there is what used to be called ARCHIVE and now is PEDVAS, run out of Canada with Dr. David Cabral. And that has looked at a lot of kids. I think 1 to 200 range with vasculitis and early sink associated. And that's the largest one. And that's the most information we have currently. I actually have a small grant through CARA to look at EGPA in kids with EGPA, because currently we don't have one centralized location for all the data. So I'm trying to find information on those patients in different institutions and different registries and seeing where we can combine forces. But I think the answer is going to be in large secondary databases that we can find information on more children. So for now, the scope is very small. Well, the world is our oyster, but what we have is very small. And so it will be interesting moving forward and finding ways to expand that. And I would mention also to what you were saying before, our group of rheumatologists is actually really big also. So a lot of states, if they have pediatric rheumatology, have only one doctor or one, two or three. We do have a lot, but as you mentioned, we cover a large area. But there are lots of states that don't have any pediatric rheumatologists. And I think I saw recently, it's like an average of 57 miles or something for a child to get seen by a pediatric rheumatologist. And so wait lists are long, and that also makes it really challenging.
It really is challenging. I was lucky enough to be diagnosed in DC, where there's a couple centers where, you know, there are rheumatologists familiar with vasculitis, and I didn't have the added, you know, peds component of that. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, it's heavy to think about having to move that far or travel that far for medical care.
A lot of people,
Kaylee knows her, you know, Kaylee's husband and I both share an alma mater, University of Missouri. So, you know, I'm in Columbia, Missouri, which not to say it's a middle of nowhere, but, you know, not exactly close to a lot of things.
Yeah. And I will say a lot of kids do go to adult rheumatologists as long as they're comfortable seeing kids, especially with ink associated vasculitis, mostly teenagers. I think some adults do feel comfortable treating them. And so that is always an option. And I know a lot of the adult research world is amazing in this field, in this area. And there's so many vasculitis specific clinics that people can go to. In pediatric rheumatology, because there's so few of us, most of us see all pediatric rheumatologic diseases. And if you do have a focus, maybe you have a clinic for that or that people will send patients to. I know I'm personally hoping to start a vasculitis clinic at our hospital. And I would still, though, in addition, do my normal clinics. And then if you have a clinic, you can do things like starting a registry and starting to collect more data. So it's a fun way to sort of combine the two.
Speaking of collecting data, you recently published a paper on pediatric EGPA and benralizumab as a treatment. Can you talk a little bit about that paper, that research, and your ongoing recommendations for kids as they're looking at treatment?
Yeah, so EGPA in kids, as you know, it's super rare. In adults, it's really rare, let alone children. But we have had a few cases recently in the past 5 years or so at Children's Hospital Colorado And we found that it is really hard to make the diagnosis, because when you look at pediatric pulmonary eosinophilia, you really can meet criteria for different diseases. And EGPA being so rare, it's, you don't want to give everybody that label. And so we wrote a paper, it was a letter to the editor for the pediatric pulmonary journal. And we just wrote about how we had three kids who had what we considered EGPA versus a pulmonary eosinophilic disease, and all were treated with benralizumab. So for those listening that might not be familiar, benralizumab is an anti-interleukin 5 receptor alpha monoclonal antibody. So it is used to block eosinophilic differentiation, survival, activation, et cetera, and is hoping to help curb the bad effects of this disease. And so there's also another form of the medication that's similar called mebilizumab. That is thought to act primarily on circulating eosinophils, where benralizumab is thought to also induce changes within the tissue eosinophils, which would be great for these diseases. So we just, because there's such limited information out there on kids with EGPA and pulmonary eosinophilia, we just wanted to make it known about these three kids we had that all seem to have a probable beneficial impact from benralizumab. They were also on steroids. One did get rituximab as well. And so those are important to keep in mind. And this is not like a controlled trial or true recommendations, but it was just a good example of trying these in children and seeing benefit. And I will mention also with these cases, and one I actually was consulted on this week in the hospital, there's this question of EVALI, or the e-cigarette or vaping use associated lung injury, and that we've been seeing a lot more of. But there's this overlap of some sort, it seems, with EGPA, where these patients might have peripheral eosinophilia, or their biopsy ends up showing vasculitis, and who knows if there's a connection. But it's just become a very confusing topic when we get these consults, because we're now getting more tissue and we're seeing things that are overlapping between the
diseases. That's fascinating. Given all the craziness to begin with, it's already going on right now. I will say this, I'm totally unbiased on this, Dr. Bloom, but with having Dr. Michael Wexler, he's been my doctor since my diagnosis. I know you guys are going to be working pretty closely, so I can say totally unbiased without any any objectivity here, that he's very good at what he does, and one of the world's leading EGPA doctors to begin with. And I know he had a big part in getting mepolizumab approval, and that's the drug I've been on for now 5-6 years, getting approval. Yeah, the differentiation, and you kind of point out, especially, I'm sure this applies as well in the pediatric field, where it's so many of these drugs get initial approval for just general like eosinophilic asthma in a more broader sense. And I know he worked really hard to get that approved specifically for patients with EGPA. I would imagine for you getting to work alongside him and a number of other really talented specialists within the EGPA field, what sort of impact has that had, at least so far, and what are you kind of anticipating that to have as you go into something like this that is so specific, but you've got some really talented people working around you?
Yeah, I feel so incredibly fortunate. Dr. Wexler not only is an amazing physician and advancing the field, but just a wonderful human and cares so much about his patients and helping future leaders or future physicians in this field grow and develop. And so, I will say also, he has taught me most of what I know about this topic, and he actually was a co-author on that paper I was just describing. And so I'm super excited, because I'm gonna probably be with him once a month in clinic and learn from him in that aspect, but also he's gonna help mentor me through my projects. And another mentor that has been really career changing has been Dr. Peter Merkel. And so I'm sure you're all very familiar with him as very big in this world of vasculitis research and this organization, but he has also sort of adopted me into the VCRC VF family and is really the reason why I pursued this fellowship. And I find working with him to be extremely inspiring, but also extremely helpful in learning these ways to do clinical outcomes research and try to sort of model what they've done in the adult world as much as possible in the pediatric world, whether that be through the VCRC or the VPPRN. So I'm really excited about all these things to come.
I really love hearing about the mentorship that goes on with the vasculitis clinician community, because I think that that's always exciting for us to hear as patients that, you know, it's not just, you know, an island sort of situation. It's collaboration across, you know, different regions and different backgrounds. So I think that that's going to be very helpful, speaking as a patient, to us in the future. Yeah.
In the pediatric world, pediatric rheumatologists are so collaborative. We have a very small community. We all basically know each other and reach out for anything. But when you do these diseases that are more rare, you have to expand beyond our small group in order to find other mentorship as well. And so it's been awesome being adopted by the adult providers who care for adults. And for my project, I'm doing a couple of projects, but one of them, I'm really trying to take advantage of having all of this adult research and look at how that can impact pediatrics patients. So for example, with the VCRC and the VPPRN, while they don't have too many children at this time, they do have a big range of ages. So they have people in their teens and then they have 90-year-olds. And so who's to say what year or what age everything shifts? And so I'm hoping to look at both networks and see if there is an association with age of disease onset or diagnosis and outcomes or delay in diagnosis management, and just trying to find whether age really plays a role in this course. And then I'm also hoping with the VPPRN to expand that to pediatrics. So I think that's been a goal of the VF and the group with the VPPRN and Kaylin and Dr. Merkel. And so I'm hoping to sort of be a voice towards the pediatric community and finding ways to connect with CARA and patient families and get the word out to their Facebook groups and really find a way to adapt the VPPRN so that not only does it include children, but it uses mechanisms that kids are actually relatable to kids. You know, you're not gonna ask a young child who's like 3 if they're having trouble tying their shoes now because of their disease. Like, they have trouble tying their shoes because they're 3. And so there is that part as well. And do the kids answer the questions? Do the parents answer the questions? There's lots of things to think about.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you mentioned Dr. Merkel as well. It just made me think of the VF's recent announcement. We will have a symposium in person, international symposium, coming next summer to Chicago. So it'll be 5 years since 2017.
Yeah.
If you've never been, Dr. Bloom, to one of these, you'll get to see Dr. Merkel. To say that he is an eccentric actor and basically steals the stage is almost an understatement.
I'm not surprised. Well, and yeah. It's funny because during COVID is when I really found my place in this world of vasculitis. And so I haven't met the majority of people in person. And so I've Zoomed and have all these relationships, but it'll be kind of odd to one day see them in the flesh.
Yes, we definitely would love to have you there at the symposium. We also have not quite as pediatric focused. We have the Young Adults Vasculitis group that Ben and I are both a part of. And so we kind of support each other, because when we all were diagnosed, it was less common, I think, even than it is now in younger people. And I know some of the parents are taking it upon themselves to sort of organize for younger children as well. So hopefully they can also make it to the symposium in Chicago.
Totally. Yeah, I'm really excited about the website you mentioned, Ben, and how one of our groups, I think it's the Inc. Associated Vasculitis Working Group within CARA, is trying to help expand that website, because I find with my patients with vasculitis, or really any form of vasculitis, it's really hard to give them a resource to look to that they can relate to, and that they can find peers and they can know what to expect. We do have in our region, at least, through the Arthritis Foundation, we have a summer camp for kids with rheumatologic disease. And so you don't have to have arthritis. You can have lupus or vasculitis. And I've been a camp counselor a few times. It's super fun. And we have a teen retreat. But at those, there might be one kid with vasculitis, and they really don't get that experience. And so something like the Young Adults group, or maybe even setting up like a mentor-mentee program that gives kids an option of meeting someone who's gone through it, would be amazing.
Yeah, those are, and all those things you mentioned are kind of all the ongoing things sort of in the works. And we're actually, you mentioned this, it's obviously been outstanding to have you on the podcast, Dr. Bloom. I know we're hoping to have Dr. Linda Wagner-Weiner, she's been the one kind of facilitating a lot of our meetings, and she does an outstanding job based in up Chicago with the CARE website. And I believe it's Dr. Avidya Sivaraman, who's also works nationwide for Children's as well, who's been heavily involved as well. So yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, the collaborative efforts have been pretty grand, as far as, even though it's COVID and there's a lot of hard things that go with logistics and all of this. I mean, it certainly seems like things are progressing pretty well. And yeah, we'll if talking about Dr. Merkel's acting skills aren't enough to convince you to coming to the symposium, maybe knowing that Kaylee and I we'll both be there. Hopefully that's enough to get through the line next summer.
Yeah, and those doctors you mentioned have been amazing. They help lead the CARA working group for vasculitis. So they have also been excellent role models and helping guide me and others through all this. And just for a sense of how rare, I had, you know, we don't have great studies on incidence and prevalence in kids, but there are some things that say the prevalence is maybe 3 to 4 cases per million children per year, or the incidence being, some studies say 0.5, some say 6.5 cases per million children per year. And so this is not common, but in our world, well, you know, anyone with it is enough to want to make a difference and help them. But being a pediatric rheumatologist, especially where I am, we see all the ones from the area. And I recently looked back in our medical records, and in the last 10 years, we've seen about 75 or so kids with ANCA-associated vasculitis. And so not necessarily their first diagnosis within the last 10 years, but the amount of kids we've seen during the 10 years. And that seems actually like a lot compared to some regions, or maybe it's just ebbs and flows, but it is something we see. And I feel like every few months we're getting a new diagnosis, maybe once a month, once every 2 months at our hospital of some form.
That's pretty surprising, at least to me. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought, you know, every 2 months, every 1 month, that's, you know, that's more frequent than I would have suspected.
That's not everywhere. I would say I was really fortunate in my program. It's a really big and catchment area, and our faculty have trained everywhere. And some of them said, you know, my entire fellowship 3 years, I saw maybe 2 or 3 patients with it, where I might've seen 8. So I think it's just luck and timing, but also location and lots of things that we don't know quite yet about the disease, but there's thoughts of different latitudes. You see different diseases or different backgrounds and ethnicities. So it's a lot of factors are going to impact. And who knows, we're at altitude. We like to blame everything on that. So maybe the altitude has to do with it.
So I guess, you know, we don't want to take too much of your time because we know you're very busy, but I did want to ask just if you had any thoughts on where you want to see specifically pediatric vasculitis treatment and research going. I know you have some plans in the works with the clinic and the VPPRN research, but just any parting thoughts on the future of that?
Yeah. I think big picture, I just want to see us moving towards a more evidence-based approach to things. And we do a great job, I think, as a community of doing that, as to the best of our ability, but there's only so much evidence available. And so I personally hope to contribute and help develop evidence-based ways to do practical care and know that we're giving Cytoxan for the right reason or rituximab and choosing our approach is based on evidence. And so whether that means we build our own database of all enough patients to do studies or find ways to work with other groups, I just really hope that this field just continues to evolve at the rapid pace it's already evolving at, and that more and more kids are involved in that process.
You're on the right track for sure. And we really appreciate you taking so much of your time just to join us.
I'm in the way beginning, but.
Well, look, we've had a very robust guest list in our 2 seasons on the podcast, and you've only added to that. So we really appreciate it. And of course, at least, you know, me personally, having my connection to National Jewish and as a patient, how much they've done for me and Dr. Wexler there in Denver, it's very cool to connect with somebody else who's also involved in that small world as well. So we really do appreciate it. And we are wishing you all the best. I know it's going to be quite the busy time, not going to slow down anytime soon, but all the best to you, and we'll keep the fingers crossed. We get to see you in person next summer in Chicago.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be on this podcast. So I really, really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much to Dr. Bloom, another outstanding guest. We've been so privileged, so fortunate to have just a great lineup in throughout the second season here of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. And Kaylee, we covered a lot of ground in a pretty short amount of time. So I think we all, no matter who you are listening, learned a lot from what she had to say.
Definitely. And I think it's just a fairly unique perspective compared to just the podcasts we've done so far, because it is that child focus. And I think that that's something, you know, we're already rare disease being vasculitis patients, but you know, when you're children dealing with vasculitis, I think it's a whole nother level. So excited to have that perspective added to our repertoire of podcasts.
You were very right on that. I feel like I name dropped a lot throughout the podcast.
You really did. You're disconnected.
I was dropping a lot of names. One of those names we are keeping the fingers crossed, we are hoping will be our October guest. And we're going to keep this theme going. And it is, you know, especially now and just how COVID now started to impact younger people in general. And that is kind of bled over into the pediatrics. And it's something that does bear talking about, not only from that standpoint, but also how we deal with vasculitis. Hoping to have Linda Wagner-Weiner, an outstanding rheumatologist as well, based in Chicago, to join us for our next episode. She is the one leading the CARA, the building of the website for pediatrics with vasculitis. So that, Kaylee, we'll just will that into existence, right? I know she's already agreed to come on. We're just trying to figure out details there. So that'll be really fun too, once we get her on to join.
We're manifesting it.
I like that. I will let that be the last word, in all honesty. As we encourage you, wherever you listen to our podcast, Apple, Spotify, or wherever else, we have all of our archives available right now. So we encourage you to go ahead and check those out. And we'll be back for our October episode, hopefully with Dr. Wagner-Weiner in a month's time. For now, though, for Kaylee, I'm Ben, saying so long on the latest episode of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast.